is Budweiser's weekday sports beat on your home of the Irish. 96.1 FM, WSBT.
Martin for three. Got it!
The Clay Colonials win the state championship.
Notre Dame has beaten number one BC. Over the boards come the Irish.
Cubs win! Cubs win!
Her shot is up. No good. And the Fighting Irish of Notre Dame have won the national championship.
Ryan Newman, Roger Penske win the Daytona 500.
The Stanley Cup to the Chicago Blackhawks.
The Irish has upset Florida State. Notre Dame is number one.
Your hosts are Eric Hansen and Darren Pritchett.
And we welcome you to Budweiser's weekday sports beat on Michiana Sports Leader 96.1 FM, WSBT, on this Friday, June the 23rd of 2017. Eric Hansen is the Fighting Irish football insider for the South Bend Tribune. He is back at our WSBT studios in Mishawaka. I'm Darren Pritchett, traveling with the South Bend Cubs. We're back in Midland, Michigan, as we will play the remainder of Game 1 and Game 2 tonight here at Dow Diamond in Midland, Michigan. The Cubs and the Loons are 1-1 playing in the bottom of the seventh inning. Last night's game was suspended due to rain, so we're going to pick up that game at 6:05. And then 30 minutes after the completion of Game 1, we will play Game number 2. So we have Eric, you're back in the studios, and I know we've got some football to get to. And on IndyInsider.com, you've just posted a story with, I guess, basically a Notre Dame football notebook. So I want to kind of get your take on some of these things, if you don't mind.
Sure.
And I know one of the stories that you just wrote about, Daniel Cage, Irish defensive lineman, he recently has had some medical procedures done. Fill us in.
Yeah, Daniel Cage was having some constant trouble with his knee. They looked into it, found a meniscus tear, so they went in and repaired that. That was actually a little bit more than a week ago. It was 8 days ago. They went in. He's actually feeling much better. The post-surgery pain was way more tolerable than the pre-surgery pain, and so the good news for Daniel is that he will be projected to be 100% when Notre Dame opens their training camp August 1st in Culver.
Okay, Eric, right now, he's considered a reserve. I almost feel like he's starter 1A at the nose guard position with Jerry Tillery there. And I guess I feel that for a couple of reasons, Eric. Number one, I think Cage is a very, very good football player and capable of playing 50% of the snaps, if not more, if need be, and I think he would do a very, very good job. And I guess also I say that, Eric, because I kind of feel like we're still waiting for Jerry Tillery to fulfill. Maybe it's our lofty expectations. Maybe we have put too much expectations on him. But until we start to see that consistent football, and, hey, we had Brian Kelly on the program the other day, and I asked him about Jerry Tillery, and he talked about, you know, he's a really good athlete. That's not the problem. But you can't be just an athlete playing an interior defensive line spot. You got to be able to use your hands and use the techniques given to you, and that's led to some of the troubles for Jerry Tillery. So I guess that's why I feel like Cage is almost a 1A starter on this football team for those two reasons.
Right, and the fact, you know, he does have 11 career starts. He's, of the eight games he played in last year, he started four of those, and you remember, Darren, that he had some concussion issues at the end of the season.
Sure.
That shortened that season. And then the year before, he started seven games at nose guard. Out of the 11 he played in, Notre Dame played 13 that year. So he was a starter actually more times than not. Now, that was also the year Jerron Jones missed. Mm-hmm. And then last year, those two were kind of a tag team. So he's got a lot of experience. You know, we didn't see him really at 100% in the spring because he had had hernia surgery in the winter, and so he didn't get all that great Matt Bayless strength and conditioning stuff going into spring. So he was a little heavy and a little bit slow in the spring, but still was able to get some good reps towards the end of it. I think he's a real valuable guy to have on your team. But I think Tillery has got to take a step up. Really, if you think about it, all the interior defensive linemen do too. Jonathan Bonner will be a starter at the defensive tackle. That's really his first extensive, you know, assignment. He's always been kind of a depth guy. Now he's going to be expected to be a production guy. And then you think about some of the folks that are trying to get on the in the depth chart behind him. And then you think about the freshmen and you wonder, okay, how's all this going to shake out? And I think that's what August is going to be about. I know that Brian Kelly, when I spoke to him the other day, feels a lot better about that defensive line group. Feels like they've come a long way, but we're going to have to see it from guys like Micah Dupre-Treadway and Elijah Taylor and Pete Makwa and Brandon Tissom, and then again the freshman Yule and Taigavaloa-Amosa, and then Heinisch. You know, those guys will get a look too. You know, I think the end position actually has developed faster. But
interesting.
Yeah, but if you're going to be a team that's good in run defense, boy, you better be good in your interior defensive line. And so that's what we're going to be – I'm going to have my eye on in August, really that interior defensive line and the safety position. I think if Notre Dame can make significant progress at those two position groups, then we're going to see a defense that's maybe better than we expect.
So when you think about the interior defensive line and the safety position, you just talked about the question marks there. Which part of the defense between those two do you feel like has the most upside, the ability to get better and the chance to possibly be a difference maker from time to time for this defense? Would you pick the interior defensive lineman or the safeties?
I would pick the interior defensive lineman because I feel like there are guys on campus, you know, Darnell Yule and Myron Taigavaloa-Amosa, I think are going to be really good players, and they're already here. I think when you look at safety, I think there's work to be done in recruiting. I think Derek Allen is a tremendous player. Guess what? He doesn't come until 2018.
Mm-hmm.
I think the linchpin there is Alohi Gilman, the transfer from Navy, who's from Laie, Hawaii. I think that Alohi, if he is eligible, if he's able to get that waiver, it upgrades that position. If not, you know, you have some nice young prospects in Isaiah Robertson and Jordan Jenmark Heath, but Jenmark Heath has only played a few years of organized football. He moved from Sweden, you know, watched YouTube to kind of learn how to play football. And he's a tremendous athlete, but he's not an accomplished athlete. And so, you know, there's going to be some learning curve for him. And then Isaiah Robertson is probably a better strong safety than free safety right now, and they really need a little bit more help at the free safety position. You still have Jalen Elliott and Devin Studd, still fairly young players. You know, Ashton White really hasn't been able to make a dent since moving over from corner.
Right.
Nick Coleman has, but I think, again, Nick Coleman is iffy because you just don't know if that speed is going to translate to really good tackling.
He's still a project, you
could
basically
say. He still is a project. I mean, I give him a lot of credit.
Yes.
He made a lot of progress in the spring and has kind of reinvented himself. But again, I think you'd feel more comfortable if he were your two free safety rather than your one free safety. So the safety position, plus, Darren, they're playing safety in a whole new way than they played in the Van Gorder system. So guys that might have been really good fits for the other system are not necessarily good fits for this one. So safety is both kind of the long-term and the short-term worry, and they're going to have to address it through recruiting. But again, Alohi Gilman is a real key figure in that whole picture.
And again, for people that maybe have been tuned out a little bit with it being summertime, Alohi Gilman is the safety that transferred from the United States Naval Academy, who had the 12-tackle game against the Irish last fall. He was a freshman last year that played corner in both safety positions. And due to the military academies, you're not allowing those student-athletes to defer their military service anymore. Gilman was allowed to transfer. He picked Notre Dame. But right now, Notre Dame is appealing the NCAA, trying to get him eligible to play this year. Of course, under most circumstances, you have to sit out a year and he'd be eligible for 2018. I guess that's the way we look at it right now until the NCAA rules otherwise. So with that being explained, Eric, I'm not saying the Irish defense can't be good without this and that happening, but for the best chance for the defense to be good and to possibly be an area of the football team that plays alongside the offense that maybe can do some good things, if you can get Gilman into the lineup, that gives them an awfully good chance to succeed, or better than they are now. And you know what the second part is? I almost feel like, and you've talked about this guy a lot, Tyler has as well, if Darnell Yule can be on the two deep, along the defensive line, and maybe I should just say that, hey, he might be able to be even a little better than a depth guy as he continues along during his freshman campaign. If you can get those two guys playing at the levels we're expecting, and again, a lot has to do with if Alohi is eligible or not, but if you want to give your defense the best chance to succeed, boy, if you can get those two in those roles I just talked about, I think they have a chance to be a very surprising defense. Now, even if they don't live up to those expectations or Gilman doesn't win the appeal, they could still be really good. But don't you think if those two parts could fall into place, then we're talking about a different ball game on defense?
I think so, both from a what if something bad happens, you know, injury type thing, but also just in terms of upgrading those positions. You know, It doesn't always happen for true freshmen defensive linemen. That's a difficult task. And we saw with Lewis Nix, for example, Lewis redshirted his freshman year because A, he came in too heavy. B, he was emotionally immature. Then he comes out his sophomore year and is tremendous. And so I think that Darnell, you know, I've spoken with him before. He's an interesting guy. And I think he probably is emotionally mature enough to handle things. What I'm kind of curious about is, you know, just the adjustment to everything else at Notre Dame. I mean, I think he'll do well in his classes. I just think it's very different from what he's used to in Hampton, Virginia, or Norfolk, Virginia, in terms of environment. I think he's actually going to embrace the environment, that he's going to feel a part of this campus pretty quick. And that's why I'm kind of projecting him to move along quicker than Lewis did. I think there's less culture shock with Darnell, because I think the differences for Darnell are good differences. You know, he and I talked about this when he went to Lake Taylor High School. Darnell was an avid student and was always the guy raising his hand and always wanting to learn. And he was very unpopular with some kids because of that yearn to learn, so to speak. And he got made fun of, and he said, you know what, I don't care. That's who I am. Well, he comes to Notre Dame, he's going to fit right in, because there's a lot of kids that want to excel in their classes. And so I think his world is about to change in a good way. And that's why I don't think that the changes are going to be quite as difficult for him. I also think, even though he didn't know Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah in high school, who lived in Hampton across the channel, I do think that it's always nice to have somebody from your part of the country that you can kind of relate to.
Well, the one thing about when you come to Notre Dame as a freshman, you don't get a gimme on the schedule starting off. I mean, Temple may not sound like a lot, but we've seen Temple play physical, strong football the last couple of years. There's a coaching change. You got Georgia. You got Michigan State. I don't want to say Boston College is a breather, because 2 years ago, we thought that might be a cakewalk, and that turned into a dogfight at Fenway Park. So that's the one thing about being a freshman at Notre Dame. You are going to be thrown right into the fire, and his first game is going to be against Temple. There's no Valdosta State on the schedule, so it's going to be quite a christening for Darnell Yule and that freshman class in the month of September. I mean, they're going to play some really, really good football teams, and they're going to be tested right away. We'll find out a lot about this team in September. Eric, there's a lot of teams across college football. The first couple of weeks, you still don't know who they are by who they play, and how many times has Notre Dame played Michigan State? And we had no idea how good the Spartans were because they played such weak competition the first two games. That's never the case with Notre Dame. We normally have a pretty good feel the direction of the football team after the first couple of weeks because normally they play really strong Power 5 football teams.
Right. The weird bounce in that schedule, and we've talked about that before, is, and I think this actually benefits Notre Dame, is that they only face one team that was in the top 40 in total offense last year on their schedule. Now, I think Georgia and some of the others that weren't will be top 40 offenses this year, or at least move in that direction. But they face 10 top 40 defenses out of the chute, which is the most any team in the country has to face. So, again, the Temple, Georgia, Boston College, Michigan State block that is the first 4 weeks, much teams that are much more defensive-oriented and elite defenses than they are elite offenses. But, again, I think Georgia's going to be... Yeah, I think that's the way you want to break it in. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that helps. I think that helps Mike Elko. I think that's, if you had to kind of pick one poison over the other, that's the one you would want. But I do think George is going to be improved offensively.
Yeah, if their quarterback can settle in as a sophomore, it looks like that offense could be outstanding. I think they have 10 starters back on that side of the football. So Jacob Eason is the guy that could stir the drink for that team. If he figures it out, then they could have a chance to be a really good contender in the SEC, and the Irish will have their hands full with Kirby Smart's team when the Bulldogs come to Notre Dame Stadium. Eric and Darren with you, SportsBeat on WSBT Radio. We're talking about the notebook that Eric just posted at ndinsider.com. This will be in tomorrow's South Bend Tribune sports section as well, so you can read more about what we're talking about in tomorrow's paper. Eric, can you offer an update on wide receiver Kevin Stefferson? Obviously had some legal issues last year and was very quiet during spring football. Doesn't mean he's not a huge part of this team. He was just one of the guys that maybe was a little more quiet in the midst of a big group of wide receivers battling for playing time.
Yeah, it was an odd spring for Stefferson. And yesterday in Fulton County, he finally kind of had resolution to his legal situation, which was an arrest last August for possession of marijuana. He pleaded guilty earlier this year to that, and then he was sentenced to, it's kind of a pretrial diversion program. It's called a conditional discharge program. So basically, if he stays out of trouble for a year, then he won't have to go back in front of the judge. He gets out of, you know, jail time and possibly more consequences and so forth. So for him, that's a really good outcome. And I think some people are tying his lack of playing time in the spring to this not being resolved. And I don't think that was the case at all. I think that this was a piece. I think there were some other pieces going on in the background that weren't necessarily public. Because if you look at the other guys that were involved in that same arrest, other than Redfield being dismissed, he had more charges and so forth than the others. You know, the other guys played a fair amount. But I talked to Brian Kelly about Stefferson, and I asked him, I said, you know, kind of what's his situation? What are you expecting at this point? Because he's a guy that in 2016, he had 25 catches. He had almost 500 yards receiving. He had 5 touchdowns, and his 462 receiving yards are more than any of Notre Dame's 10 career leaders in that category in receiving yards, more than any of them had their freshman year except for Michael Floyd. So that's a very high bar that he set with his freshman year. But the thing was, and when you talk to Brian Kelly, you kind of get a sense of what went wrong and what's starting to go right this summer. And he said, I think he's maturing every day, and I think unfortunately we had to accelerate him last year. He wasn't ready emotionally. Physically, he's extremely gifted. It would have been nice to redshirt him last year, but he's making progress every single day as long as he's not reminded about how great he is. He doesn't need that. He just needs to focus on school and growing as a person. If he does that, he's going to be a tremendous player. Unfortunately, we had to move him a little bit quicker than we wanted to. I think Brian Kelly built in some safety net in case Stefferson wasn't going to move in that direction with the addition of the grad transfer receivers, Freddie Canteen and Cameron Smith. However, I think Stefferson can still work his way. I think he's talented enough. And it sounds like, again, Brian Kelly is starting to see what he wants to see from Stefferson in terms of maturity. And that's a big thing with a lot of players. You know, it's not always your talent. You have to have the maturity to be a good worker, to show up on time, to do a lot of the things that are required in team sports. And again, I think it's a good sign Brian Kelly seeing some of that.
And it's maybe a lesson for Kevin at this point, because two guys that took care of their business have stormed up the depth chart,
right.
And that's Miles Boykin and Chase Claypool. They appear to be starters alongside of Equanimeous St. Brown. So there's a perfect example for Kevin or anybody that if you're not going through the process the way you should, not respecting the process, whatever the case may be, you can fall behind very quickly. And at major college football programs, there's enough good players around that you could be left in the dust very, very quickly. And with those three, and we haven't even mentioned Canteen and Cameron Smith and Fink and Sanders and McKinley, I mean, you can get lost in the shuffle very, very quickly, especially with a guy like Cameron Smith, Eric, being brought in as a grad transfer from Arizona State. We've heard about his blazing speed, which is one of the strengths of Kevin Stefferson's game at wide receiver. You've got Cameron Smith, Eric, a guy that's played a lot of football. Now, I know he's been injured, and he's had to deal with injuries that have held him back. But at the same time, he's a more experienced college football player. And if he can come in and if he can stay healthy, there's no reason to believe that this coaching staff's not going to give Cameron an opportunity. They're not just bringing him in to be a tutor for these guys and a babysitter. Sure, he's going to add a lot in that area to teach some of the young guys, but Eric, from what we hear about Cameron Smith, that speed is a difference maker, and he could find his way into the conversation. I don't know if he's a situational guy. I don't know if that's fair to say about what he could be, but he's a guy that you have in your back pocket that can be a very intriguing player for this coaching staff on the offensive side of the football to try to get on the field and do some good things.
Exactly, Darren. And if, you know, Notre Dame isn't going to be Baylor tempo, but they're going to be faster than they have been. And if they are, and if they're running, you know, significantly more plays than the 67 to 69 they've kind of been at the last few years, then I think you can expand that wide receiver core. You can expand the playing rotation. And so you could, you know, you could certainly benefit by having 11 receivers on your roster, nine of whom really kind of project as guys that could help you this year. So I don't know that they would go nine deep, but I think you could certainly go six deep pretty easily and have some pretty good quality there. And then we'll see, you know, how the other guys fit in. But I think they're in a really good position with this. You know, Brandon Wimbush has a lot of guys to work out timing with.
Yeah.
Because there's so many of them. And the thing that's interesting, Darren, too, is that all of a sudden your tight end group has gotten noticeably stronger. So it's not like you're going to be playing a lot of four wide and just kind of forgetting about the tight end. Suddenly you have Alizé Jones back, Durham Smyth improved, you got the two freshmen that look pretty promising. So it's a pretty impressive group.
Anybody in a skill position role right now cannot fall asleep for a day because they can be passed by several guys with the depth right now at wide receiver, tight end, and running back. Eric Hansen, Fighting Irish Football Insider for the South Bend Tribune. I'm Darren Pritchett. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about the Fighting Irish football team. Another part of the notebook, there is a bowling event coming up. We should at least pass that along for people who want to be a part of a great event, so we'll do that. And also a lineman challenge is coming up this weekend at Notre Dame. Tyler James, the Fighting Irish football recruiting insider for the South Bend Tribune, talked about it last night during his report. But how long have the Irish been having lineman challenges, and what are the goals? We'll talk about that coming up. VJ Beachum was not drafted last night, but an interesting report could land him in a spot where he might have a chance to contribute down the line. We'll do that and more coming up as Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat continues. Presented by Budweiser, great times are waiting. Grab some Buds and Legacy Heating and Air on Michiana Sports Leader 96.1 FM WSBT. Matt, thanks for the forecast. Along with Eric Hansen, the Fighting Irish Football Insider for the South Bend Tribune, I'm Darren Pritchett. Sports beat only an hour tonight due to South Bend Cubs baseball. We have to complete last night's suspended game, which was 1-1 in the seventh inning. That will start at 6:05. After game one, we'll take a 30-minute break and come back with game number two here in Midland. And I'll tell you, we had a ton of rain. Once it started raining at about, 10 o'clock last night, it poured here, leading to the suspension of game one. I don't know if it stopped until about 8 o'clock this morning, and we had 6 to 7 inches of rain in the Midland area. In fact, several roads around our hotel were completely flooded, and I know our bus, in order to do some pickups at a local grocery store for the players, had to go through a makeshift parkway through the Kohl's parking lot by our hotel. So the main road was going through a parking lot to get around all this water that's standing around Midland. So, in fact, watching the local news, there were streets that have not been flooded in 25 years that were flooded overnight. So we had a ton of rain, around 7 inches here in Midland, but the field's in great shape. We'll get started at 6:05 with first pitch as South Bend and Great Lakes will wrap up game one. We're in the bottom of the seventh inning, tied at one. Well, yesterday at 5:30, we were talking to Tyler James, our Thursday NDInsider.com recruiting update. And, Eric, one of the things that Tyler talked about was Notre Dame hosting a lineman challenge this weekend. And Tyler reported that some pretty good guys are coming to the challenge. Defensive tackle Jamian Franklin, who committed a few weeks ago. Offensive lineman Cole Mabry and John Dirksen are going to be there. Eric, it seems like all these universities are finding ways to get these players on campus, whether it be Irish Invasion or these type of camps. How long have the Irish been doing a lineman challenge?
It actually predates Harry Hiestand's arrival here, which Harry has been at Notre Dame since 2012. But I think it became a bigger deal with Harry being here, and it became a recruiting kind of event slash camp. Now it's not just a recruiting event, because this isn't invitation only. And last year they had more than 300 players on campus for this. But I think Harry has elevated it to another level. So we'll say that the bright lights version of it started in 2012. How's that? It
sounds good to me. Obviously, it isn't a recruiting event, but it is an opportunity for anybody to come and see the campus, be around the coaching staff, learn techniques. So it's kind of, I guess, a quote-unquote non-built-in recruiting opportunity for Notre Dame to get some of these players on campus.
I think so. And when you talk about Jamian Franklin, you know, his mom is coming with him. That's a big deal. Even though he's committed, I think it makes his commitment even more solid that mom gets to come and see campus and fall in love with it on a nice weather day, coming out from the East Coast. You know, it would have been nice for Thomas Booker, a defensive end out from the East Coast as well, that Notre Dame is trying to nail down with a commitment. He's from the Gilman School in the Baltimore area. Unfortunately, they had a death in the family, so he's not going to be able to make it. But, you know, there's going to be a couple of offensive linemen in the class, Cole Mabry and John Dirksen, that'll be there. And again, you know, you never know. You may spot somebody that's a sophomore that you haven't seen before, that wasn't on your recruiting radar, that catches your attention. So it's been a really, really cool event. Like I said, over 300 guys last year.
Is there any opportunity, and obviously pads are not involved, but is there an opportunity for offensive linemen and defensive linemen to do drills against each other, or is this mainly the offensive guys are just kind of doing their thing and the defensive guys are doing their thing?
From what Tyler has told me, and I hope that I'm not misquoting him, is that they will have opportunities to do drills against each other. So you will get some of that. And I think that's a positive. At the Irish Invasion this year, there were not the standout offensive linemen that there typically are. So the Adam Malola twins and so forth were having to, you know, they weren't given the competition that they would normally get at something like the Irish Invasion because, again, there was a schedule conflict with a rivals camp. But in this particular one, there will be really good players on both sides.
All right, Tyler will keep us updated in the South Bend Tribune, IndyInsider.com, if anything comes from that lineman challenge this weekend at the University of Notre Dame. Before we close up shop on football talk for today, again, Eric has a brand new notebook that's available right now at IndyInsider.com, and it will be in tomorrow's South Bend Tribune sports section. And this will be in that notebook, but I think we need to publicly mention this because a very important charitable event is coming up locally very soon. Pass along the details.
Right. It's called the Uplifting Athletes is the name of the organization. And Joe Schmidt kind of took this and ran with it a few years ago. And they've kept it going after the chapter. It's a national organization, but Joe Schmidt was the Notre Dame chapter president or whatever, chapter rep. But they have this bowling tournament every year. This will be the fifth year for it, and it benefits, you know, some rare diseases for you know, that it's hard to say this, for the research for it, for skill development for people, sure, with rare diseases. The whole kind of impetus of this was there was a young man by the name of Sam Grew that was a student at Northridge who had osteosarcoma, and Notre Dame kind of adopted him during that 2012 mm-hmm. season as kind of one of their own, and he was kind of the inspiration for Notre Dame getting involved in this. It's interesting with Sam because he's gone on to become cancer-free and also kind of a awesome world-class Paralympic athlete. He was down at Rio de Janeiro in 2016 and won the high jump. So it's really been a cool story. But basically with this event, you get to bowl with the football players, take pictures with them, interact with them, ask what Brian Kelly's really like, ask what Darren Pritchett's really like. And it's a lot of fun. And you can register online at their page, and it raises money for a great cause.
All right, all the details. Go ahead.
And it's at Strikes and Spares in Mishawaka Sunday from 10 to noon.
All right, so all the details right now at IndyInsider.com, and again in tomorrow's South Bend Tribune sports section. V.J. Beachum is a guy we talked about on last night's program. Would he be drafted? 60 selections, 30 in the first round, 30 in the second round, and the NBA draft has come and gone, and V.J. Beachum was not selected, but that doesn't mean he doesn't have another door to get into the NBA. There's a report from WANE.com that says that Beachum is very close to signing a free agent contract with the Minnesota Timberwolves, an up-and-coming team, and a team that acquired Jimmy Butler from the Chicago Bulls last night. So even though Beachum was not drafted, I'm not totally shocked by that. I just didn't think his senior season stood out. It's so hard for seniors to get drafted anyway because you kind of know who they are as basketball players, and the NBA draft is so much about projection for so many young guys. I just didn't think he did enough during his senior year to get taken despite his size, but he's going to sign on with someone. I guess I wouldn't be shocked if he doesn't make a roster at some point, but it sounds like he might go to Minnesota, but nothing official as of yet. So no Notre Dame player taken in this year's NBA draft. We'll wait to see if Steve Astoria gets an invite. I'm sure he'll be a part of the G League, which used to be the developmental league for the NBA, but Beachum, maybe he'll sign with Minnesota very soon. Speaking of Minnesota, and it was the Bulls last night pulling off a deal in which they sent an all-star player in Jimmy Butler to Minnesota along with the 16th overall pick. In return, Zach LaVine, Chris Dunn, and the number 7 overall pick went to the Bulls. Hey, there's no question the Bulls like Jimmy Butler as a basketball player, but I don't think they felt comfortable about paying Jimmy Butler elite player money. So they had to make a decision, Eric. They were either going to cough up money for Jimmy Butler and hope he becomes more of an elite player, or it was time to move on from Butler, not pay him, and try to get what you can. I don't blame the Bulls for moving him, and I always get concerned when I hear broadcasters say, well, they didn't get enough for Jimmy Butler. You look at the deal. Levine is a guy that averaged 18.9 points per game before suffering a torn ACL last year. He was the 13th pick in 2014, so there's some upside there. You got the Dunn kid, who was number 5 overall last year out of Providence College. Maybe he becomes a better player down the line. And then you get the 7-footer with the 7th overall pick, and Lauri Markkanen out of Arizona. The Bulls were awful at shooting threes last year. The college three-point line, Markkanen, hit 69 three-pointers for the University of Arizona, so he could be that big, I guess, stretch forward that can shoot from the outside to help the Bulls down the line. But, Eric, I always just get confused how we as broadcasters can sit here and say, well, they didn't get enough for Jimmy Butler. Honestly, when you look at that, it's an all-star player you're giving up. It doesn't seem like you got enough, but there may not have been any other deals any better than Jimmy Butler. And if you have set your mind to trading him and you're not going to pay him the huge dollars, then you're just going to take what you can get for him. And maybe that's the best offer they had. I can't imagine they would pass on an offer that was any better. So I think all the people saying, well, they didn't get enough for Jimmy Butler, I don't know, holding on to him, if that really matters down the line. Maybe that was the best deal they could do.
I know I heard from some Bulls fans last night, including one that sits in a cubicle pretty close to me, and he wasn't too happy about it. But I saw David Haw from the Chicago Tribune had a column, and he actually thought trading Jimmy Butler was the right move.
Interesting. Well, he has elite talent. He's a pretty good defender. Tom Thibodeau is the head coach of the Timberwolves. He had him with Chicago, so there's a really good relationship there. Now, everybody has their own opinions about this deal. One that kind of stood out to me, Fox Sports writer Andrew Lynch graded each team's NBA draft, which is awfully hard to do because you don't know how these guys are going to pan out. But it's a part of the process that I guess we all do in the media business. He gave the Bulls an F-. An F wasn't good enough. They got an F-, and he wrote, a team that reportedly wanted the sun and the moon for Butler all season long settled on a few magic beans and a pick swap. Then, as if to rub their incompetence in our faces, the Bulls sold the number 38 pick to the Warriors, allowing Golden State to add the player it most wanted in Oregon's Jordan Bell. The only saving grace for Chicago on this one is getting Markkanen, as he rates as one of the best big men in the draft, bully for the Bulls. Well, if Markkanen becomes an elite player, the trade makes more sense because you get the feel that Zach LaVine's going to be a pretty decent player. Maybe Dunn becomes something, but you just got to let this play out. I know it's always hard to give up an all-star player that's considered an elite player, and you get a pile of stuff for him. I think you have to let it play out because also, Eric, you have to factor in with the salary cap, the money that they save. Maybe there's a couple of more pieces that get added. So before we write F- on this draft and this trade for the Bulls, I think you have to wait to see what roster they put together, and maybe the player added comes in next year. Maybe they save some space, who knows. But it's awfully hard to just rule it an awful trade when you don't know what other offers they had and you don't know how good the marketing kid's going to be.
Right. David's point in his column was that, you know, they might have to take a step back to take two steps forward.
Sure.
And he just felt like an organization that has kind of been averse to taking a risk, took a risk. But if they didn't, they were kind of destined to be in the middle for,
yeah,
you know, the foreseeable future.
If you keep doing the same thing over and over and over, it's usually not going to change.
Agreed.
And in the NBA right now, there's two elite teams, and who's going to beat the Warriors or the Cavaliers over the next year? So next year's a throwaway for everybody but those two, in my particular opinion. All right, when we come back, we'll have our My Five question of the day. And today we are going to ask, Michigan head coach Jim Harbaugh wants to invite the Obamas to be captains at a Wolverine football game. So with that in mind, if Notre Dame did something like that, who are the five people Brian Kelly should invite to be a captain? So we'll have some fun with that. Plus, if you're a Blackhawks fan, and a couple of years ago you had a Brandon Saad jersey or a sweater, Hopefully you didn't throw it away. I'll explain why coming up as SportsBeat continues on WSBT.
One question, five answers. This is the My Five Question of the Day on Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT.
Michigan head football coach Jim Harbaugh wants to invite the Obamas to be a captains at a Wolverine football game this year. So with that in mind, if Notre Dame invited captains, who are five people Brian Kelly should invite to be a captain this year? Five answers coming your way. We begin with number five.
I'm going to go with David Ortiz at number five. I think it's Brian Kelly's favorite player, one of his favorite players in another sport. And I think Big Pappy would have something cool to say to the Notre Dame football team. So that's my number five person.
Very good. Number four.
I feel like we have to have a woman's presence on here, so I'm going to go with Oprah at number four. And then she can stand on the sideline and look at the offense and go, and you get a touchdown, and you get a touchdown, and you get a touchdown.
Unbelievable. We're going through, if Notre Dame had captains who Brian Kelly should choose, number three.
In our little audio version for our tablet version of our magazine, I asked Brian Kelly the song when it comes on the radio makes him squeal like an overzealous game show contestant. And he said, Born to Run. So, Bruce Springsteen, you're up at number three.
Very good choice right there. Let's move along to number two.
On this one, kind of a serious note, I think this guy was a tremendous leader and a tremendous player for Notre Dame, and all the kind of deadspin stuff that happened to him right after his career ended, I think took away from some of what was real with his career. So I say bring Manti back and let him be a captain for a game.
Love that idea. So if Brian Kelly were able to bring in captains for a football game, who should he choose? David Ortiz, Oprah, Bruce Springsteen, Manti Te'o, and number one is?
I don't think there's any question who number one should be on this list. He's 94 years old. He's sharp as a tack. If he's up to it, let's bring Era back and let him be a captain for a game.
Can you imagine the roar in the stadium?
It would be incredible. And with the new Jumbotron and everything else, it would hold that sound in and be really incredible.
That would be an electric moment. Let's do it before the USC game.
Sounds great.
I like that idea. All right, real quick before we have to take one more break, the Chicago Blackhawks were very busy. Today is draft day in the NHL. They made not one but two trades, and I mentioned I hope Blackhawk fans didn't throw away that Brandon Saad sweater that they had when he played for the Blackhawks a couple of years ago, because he's back. The Blackhawks today dealt defenseman Nicholas Jarmolson and also winger Artemi Panarin in swaps with Arizona and Columbus. In the Panarin trade, the Blackhawks reacquire winger Brandon Saad, who spent the last 2 years after being traded to Columbus. And I think this is a very interesting deal. With the circumstances with 38-year-old Marian Hossa with the skin disorder and the issues with the medication he had been taking, he's not going to play this year. And Eric, he is a tremendous two-way player. He's not just a scorer, but he's also one of those guys that takes care of the defensive zone at a very high level. That's why we call those type of players two-way players, because they're good in both ends. Well, with Brandon Saad, you get that type of player back. I would say Panarin has more offensive upside. He worked very well with Patrick Kane. But now you bring in Saad, who kind of takes the role of Marian Hossa on the hockey team. You'll have to figure out who plays with Kane once again. And I think they're possibly thinking about putting Saad back with Taves. Taves has not been as good the last couple of years offensively. He's still good defensively, but Saad was a guy that played with Taves a lot, so maybe that sparks Jonathan. So I kind of look at the deal in a couple of different ways. Number one, they get a two-way player back that they're very familiar with, and maybe that sparks Jonathan Taves by putting Saad back with him. The Blackhawks also sent Tyler Motte in the deal to the Blue Jackets, and they also picked up a backup goalie and Anton Forsberg to join the roster. The one thing about Panarin and Saad, they're both $6 million hits against the cap, but the thing that we need to mention is that Saad is under contract for two more years. So that's something that could be in play as well. It looks like we might start a little early here at the ballpark, so I better wrap up SportsBeat in a hurry, brought to you by Budweiser and Legacy Heating and Air. Eric, have a good weekend. We'll talk to you on Monday.
Sounds great.
Cubs baseball next on WSBT South Bend.